making good. I'm Renee Blanchard, founder and operator of Church Alley Cafe and Grocery, located here in New Orleans, Louisiana. Church Alley is a people-first, mission-driven small business that I opened in 2013. And the best part about owning a cafe is the people. So in this podcast, I interview the makers, the farmers, and the many interesting people I've met through the shops, the folks doing the good work here in Louisiana and all along the Gulf Coast. Let's get started.
I'm Caroline. I'm one of the owners of Cafe Grumpy, and we opened our first location in Brooklyn in 2005, and we've since grown to 12 locations. We have one in New Jersey, one in Miami, the rest are in New York, and we roast our own coffee. And yeah, that's it.
Thank you so much. And then we also have been using Cafe Grumpy as our espresso and a cold brew, I think since 2015. I think that's one of your guys came in, I think was just traveling in New Orleans visiting, and he dropped off a sample. And
that was good for us then. Thank you. we're really proud to have you as one of our customers. Thank you for doing that.
Yeah, it's been awesome. And then we've had different people who, you know, obviously we're a big tourist city, so we mm-hmm. get a lot of people from New York as well. And so we've had people who've used your coffee for either worked for you in the past, like worked for as a roaster in the business or in the cafes, and who've like used your coffee in competitions and like all kinds of stuff. So it's been really interesting. And we always get someone who is like, oh, I love this. I was visiting New York and I did it, you know, and so it's always a cool conversation to have y'all in the shop.
That's really a nice thing. That's nice to hear. Yeah, I remember that. And I think you've been really helpful also with your team. I think you support us when we had an event that we needed some baristas. That was really great.
Emily and Victoria, Emily loved it. She had so much fun going. We don't go to the convention center, you know what I mean? Like, we never go to these conventions. So it was like really, she was like, this was awesome. We just like talked about my favorite coffee all day. It was cool. So that was an awesome opportunity for my staff too. I wanted to ask, how did you decide to open Cafe Grumpy? So to open your store and then to start roasting, like what did the process look like?
Well, the store, I mean, I opened it with my partner at the time and now husband, Chris, and we just kind of were going around trying different coffees. We worked in offices and you couldn't really find anything that we liked. So we're like, it shouldn't be this hard to like give people a good cup of coffee. So we were like, to try to take on the challenge. And we spent a while looking for a space. And at first, you know, I'd be walking around talking to landlords and people wouldn't take us seriously. And then one day I was walking by our first location in Greenpoint, and the landlord was in there actually turning it into a big apartment. And I walked in and asked if, you know, he would rent it for a coffee shop. And he was the first person that was like, okay, sure. So that's how that started. And it happened to be pretty close to the apartment that I lived in at the time, but it was sort of off the beaten path. So that was our first store, and it was pretty challenging at first. We tried to do different things for the community. We had art shows in the back. We had musicians come in. We had like game night, movie night, stuff like that. So we sort of like grew with the neighborhood, but I guess I'm jumping ahead, but in the course of a year, we're like, we got to make a decision. Like, do we close this and just forget it? Or do we like just go for it and try to open a second location? So that's kind of how we started our expansion. We opened our second location in Chelsea, which turned out to be pretty positive, and the neighbors were really receptive at that point. So I don't know. I guess I'll jump to the roasting part, which is a whole other story. At the beginning, we were using multiple roasters that, like you do in your store. Yeah. And so, you know, we went to Seattle to do barista training, and we'd bring in different coffees and try this stuff with our staff. At the time, it wasn't that many baristas working with us, just maybe one or two. And then we'd always wanted to roast because we felt like it would give people that worked with us opportunities to like grow in the coffee field. And also it allows us to like have more transparency with where we get the coffees from. So that ended up happening 2009, I think. We ended up roasting in the back of our original location because there was a lot of space that we could set up a small roaster back there. So,
It's interesting because y'all were kind of in this, the timing of y'all opening and going from, and then starting roasting was an interesting time in coffee anyway, because there was this huge change from, I guess, even small, for like small shops or small businesses were just really increasing the quality of what they were serving. Mm-hmm. And the roasters at the same time were kind of changing, or I'm sorry, there was like a flood of new people coming into the roasting industry who were, maybe that was a technology thing. I don't know if the roasters were smaller or maybe there was more access to being mm-hmm. able to roast, a number of people being able to roast. But it was an interesting time because it really changed that whole time at the mid 2000s to 2010 changed what our local coffee shops kind of look like and mm-hmm. taste like. And y'all are at the front end of that.
Yeah, it was, I feel like people were at first like, what are these people doing? Like, and you know, it was a little bit, I think a little bit more expensive compared to some other places, because we were trying to keep the coffee fresh, and we had like a really nice, like Synesso was the first one in New York City, and we had our organic milk, and we were really particular, and you know, try to take everything really seriously with the coffee, but also keep like a welcoming atmosphere. I feel like during that time there was only in New York maybe a few shops, and then like you said, people started to like get more, like it started to be, I guess their expectations started to change. Like they wanted to know where the beans were from, like what, you know, then you get a little nerdy about how long you're pulling your espresso shots. Obviously back in that time it was like triple ristrettos. So it was like super intense shots. Yeah. So that means it's really changed a lot. It's kind of, that's like the fun part to see how people's tastes change, and also how like baristas, their attitudes change and how they take certain things seriously. And I feel like now I do think in general people are a little more lighthearted, and maybe that's because of the pandemic and everything. But.
It got pretty serious there in the beginning of the 2010s, people taking their coffee.
Yeah.
But it is an interest. I mean, there's just swings of trends or tastes or what people expect or want. But it is interesting that, because we have a, New Orleans gets a lot of people from New York that move down here, young people that move down here. And so we have a lot of baristas over the years that have been from New York who worked at 9th Street Espresso or different places and came and worked us. And they were, and it's such a different environment. One, so they were serious people and interested in learning, but then they also had to like deal with like our humidity and our terrible water situation. All these parameters, when you think of coffee, a normal customer maybe doesn't like kind of see all the pieces that go into, but it's very similar to baking. Like we're perfecting a recipe all day, over and over and over again to make the most delicious cup of coffee.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like as a coffee shop owner, you notice that stuff. Like if someone's opening the door too much, like you said, the humidity, like they're adjusting the grinds, like other people just think, like, what's taking so long? Or like, why does it taste different today? Like, so yeah, that's funny.
It's interesting having people from New York come in and work the shop, and they're like, oh my God, they couldn't dial in the same way. Especially in the summertime as they did.
Yeah.
And so that was a great learning because we opened our shop in 2013. So a bit of a time, almost 10 years after y'all did. And after this big change had kind of happened in the industry. And then I was learning, we were all learning at the same time down here, which is pretty on course for New Orleans. We're about 10 years behind. That was about the right timing.
That's really funny.
it was interesting when you said like at the end of that first year, what do we do? Do we close or do we go bigger? And that is, I think, across industries of very small businesses like ours, because of volume and debt and capital and cash flow, we end up at some point where we have to make a big decision because the amount of sales coming in just doesn't match what we need to do to stay open for the long haul. So what was that like what was that process of deciding to open a second location and to just jump into it further?
Yeah. And it's just what you said just then about like all those things that you think about. And with coffee as a small business owner, do you like expand or not? Because it is like volume, you want to sell more, but then people don't realize how much, like you said before, how it goes into every single cup. So it's like, you're really trying to, like, it's not just as easy as like, let's just open another store and everything will be fine. So you have to think about, you know, the costs of setting stuff up and also the staffing and the different neighborhoods. I mean, I guess we just thought, I feel like we really were proud of our brands that we'd built, and like even like the logo that my brother made and just the whole like environment. And we just wanted to, we thought maybe if we opened somewhere with a little bit more foot traffic, then we have a chance and see if people will be responsive. So
yeah,
I don't know, I guess like it's part of being a business owner. You have to like take some risk.
Yeah.
Although sometimes I look back and I'm like, I wish we just had one store. But, you know, it depends on the day.
Yeah, totally.
So that store, we just tried to take a risk and we opened that, and we decided to do like brew by the cup, even though people just liked a lot of brewed coffee. So we brought in a menu where people could select different coffees that we'd make one at a time. So that was that store, 2006, that was November 2006, we launched that. And we actually found that location on Craigslist, because once again, like, I feel like it was a little early for coffee shops. So people were like, oh, whatever, you want to open a coffee shop, you don't really have a business plan. And
yeah,
so we were lucky with that shop. But I feel like you just kind of have to get a feeling, like we spoke about a little bit earlier, just with the space. Also, the location just kind of felt right. There was something special about it. It wasn't on an avenue, so maybe it might have not seemed like a good location to someone who maybe wasn't from New York City or was just looking at numbers. But it had a good feel to it. It was like between two avenues, and it was in a cute storefront. So it's kind of back to that thing where you have to sort of follow your instinct and make decisions. Obviously logical decisions based on your support you have available and how far you want to take your business, but also just kind of relying on your intuition a little bit, and just also knowledge of your community and your neighborhood. Obviously every block is like different, and so that's kind of important also when you pick a space. I sort of went off tangent there, but
no, I mean, I think that's all important. I've talked to, you know, we have a lot of turnover on restaurants here in New Orleans. One, it's very easy to open a business here. Like, there's just not a lot of challenges. It doesn't take a ton of money. People really are willing to work together. So like people will open their doors of their own restaurant to a pop-up or someone to come and work a few shifts or do a regular pop-up or something. And so that part is easy. Staying a business is different. So we have a ton of turnover here. And I recently talked to, or I guess it was a few years ago, a chef that I love dearly, and I love his food. And he's been in business for like 30 years here and opened a number of restaurants. And he was closing a restaurant that was, I think, one of the best places in the city because there was no business. And he was like, you know, sometimes it's the space. Sometimes we don't know what happens. It's mm-hmm. not even that we don't know how to run this business or we don't know how to do this. Sometimes it's just the space. There's some kind of magic that we get into, and it's either the right magic or it's the wrong magic, you know, even if we do everything right around.
Yeah. I'm glad other people, okay. I'm glad to hear.
Yeah. Where it's like, I think this is it. That's kind of how we've decided in our spaces of like, sometimes, you know, when we first opened this new location, I would sit in it after hours and I'd be like, okay, tell me what to do next. Like, tell me.
You're like feeling the vibes of the, yeah.
Do y'all have, adjacent to that is like, do y'all have like, or do you have specific like values or a philosophy or like some kind of mission in how you dug or kind of tethered yourself to as you've grown to 12 locations like this?
I feel like we always started by caring about the people that works with us and just wanting to create a positive environment and also like a place where they could have a job. And a lot of people, obviously artists, so we wanted to be flexible with things like scheduling. And so I think that was like the forefront. And that also translates to when you start roasting, just the produce, working with the producers, like we try to work with the same producers year after year. So we get to know them and they have a guaranteed buyer for their products, their coffee. And so I feel like that really was the foundation, just being compassionate and caring and just feeling like every decision you make is, you're affecting someone's, especially the producer's, the livelihood. So, and also just caring about in general, just environment, animals, you know, that all goes into, that also goes through, Chris and I really care about those things. So just when you make decisions to the best that you can, obviously in coffee shops, there's still tons of waste, you know, with the cups, like I'm guilty of that too. I try to like remind myself, bring your reusable cup, but so there's a lot of waste inherent in coffee shops, but just being mindful and making decisions to the best of your ability, keeping in mind like those values. And as we've grown, just you learn so much about people and just relationships between people and just learning how to be like non-judgmental and listening and like thinking about different perspectives. It really has been, it's like more than just, I was like, even it's way more than just the coffee. It's like so much complexity, you know, as a business owner, it's like.
How do you think you've changed personally through this process of growth for your business?
Well, I feel like I've been since the beginning, I've tried to become more organized and I've always like worked hard. So that really wasn't, that's something, you know, I feel like that helped me. I've tried to be more aware of like health and, you know, started like exercising and trying to keep a little bit, because if you're not feeling good or not doing well, you're not going to be able to like, you do your job calm. Or help. Yeah, you can't help anyone else. Also just staying calm, because in the coffee shops, like we have 12 locations right now. So every day, I don't know what's going to happen. Yeah. We have a Slack channel with all of our staff. I think we have probably 55 people now. So who knows what messages you're going to get at like 4 a.m. So just trying to stay calm and just figure out each problem as it comes up in the best way you can. And also keeping in mind, you know, it's obviously coffee is super important. I don't want to get up and not have coffee. People rely on us for their jobs, but it's also, it is just coffee. If you have to open late or you can't open or someone calls out because of some emergency, it's not the end of the world, which I feel like almost the pandemic, even though it was so terrible, that kind of reinforced that, you know, we did close for a while and it was okay. You know, we obviously are still struggling with the, like we talked about, the debt that you get and all of this stuff, but it kind of makes you realize, you know, it keeps things in perspective, I guess, because you can kind of get crazy about things.
That is one thing we, you know, we've had customers, I've worked in restaurants since I was like 15, you know, and I've worked in graveyard, fine dining, all kinds of different things. And so I'm used to like a shift going terribly wrong and having to like, you have to ride the wave of a terrible shift. You can't really, you're not going to fix it. But, and talking to my staff, when they get overwhelmed, I was like, okay, well turn around, stop. Don't look at the customers, just turn around and look at the wall behind you and do whatever you can do and pretend there's no one else there. And also, it's just coffee. Who gives a shit? Like, I don't care, you know? Like, if you need to take a moment, walk away. Like, you're gonna be okay. They're going to be okay. Like, you know? And I think, I appreciate that because things happen. Things do take a long time or you know, or it just doesn't go right. You know, whatever. We've had, I'm sure you have too, had machines break during shift or have like power go out. We often have power go out in New Orleans. We're navigating that.
Yeah. And I feel like, because you were also worked in restaurants and I worked in restaurants, I think it gives us good perspective, like of the dynamics, the ever changing dynamics of the customer service, like sometimes it's stressful and a lot of the times it's stressful and you have to, the people working behind the bars, it's hard not to get defensive sometimes or take things personally. And also people are coming in before their coffee. And they're also looking for, you know, coffee shops kind of provide like a therapy for people. So it's good to have perspective of what the people that work for you are also going through on a daily basis. And like you said, where you're telling people to like take a break or look at the wall, I think any techniques that you can help with that you can offer them is really positive. And I feel like that makes a good company and people feel like supported that way. So
yeah. I think safe. And it's interesting. Yeah. With the pandemic as well, like that made it even more so. And we talked throughout the pandemic about what we were each doing in our shop, what New York and New Orleans had very similar timelines as well of what was going on. And we had, you know, we made every decision. There's only five of us, so it was easier, but we made all of our decisions through consent. And like we sit together in the room while it was empty and talk through whatever wasn't working or what we were scared about. Or we have customers that were doctors. We pulled them into the conversation to be like, okay, let's just ask a doctor what they're saying.
You know?
And that's easy. We're such a small community to do that. But that really challenged me to be able to communicate in those ways, you know, where I didn't necessarily have to do that. When I was just the boss and trying to make decisions. But it made everyone feel, even our customers feel like, okay, everyone is making decisions for the best, for everyone's best and good. And I think, like you're saying, like maybe some of these things are sticking or kind of moving forward.
Yeah, I think so. And people, I think, appreciate, also, I feel like maybe they appreciate food service a little bit more and having those little places in their communities they can go and like meet friends and chat and like just get a good cup of coffee. So that's really good too.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like just having, like we know we can go to the coffee shop and hang out for a couple hours now where that was not the case 3 years ago.
I mean, it's also like changed our, when we talk about like growing our business, it's also changed. The pandemic definitely changed like what we look for in spaces. Like in the beginning, we started with our Greenpoint store in the small neighborhood, and then we moved to Chelsea, also like a small neighborhood. And then we kind of, as we expanded, we were like, oh, we should look at more commuter hubs and like transport areas. But now after the pandemic, and a lot of people are like hybrid working or working from home on Mondays and Fridays, you know, if we were to look for new spaces now, we would definitely keep that in mind and almost go back to like the original like way that we used to look for stuff. So,
yeah, that's right. I mean, because New York, I mean, what we hear on is like news headlines, right? Like all these buildings are still empty. No one's kind of, is that true? Are there sections of the city that are more quiet or still quiet?
There's definitely a few of our locations in like the more like financial district, fashion district kind of areas. Those are still challenging because they're there like Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, but not as many people come in Mondays and Fridays. And even in general, just throughout the week, it's definitely slower just in general. So I feel like it has changed, and I'm not sure if it's going to change back. So we just have to kind of plan for a different like reality, I guess, of how people work and shop. Like they're not going to, you know, we'd see people in the morning at our Park Slope store and then in the midday in our Midtown store. And now maybe those people are staying home to work or they've moved or something like that. So it's definitely changed the way our business has, been. So.
Yeah, still impacting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. We shortened our hours, and I don't think we're going to go back to longer hours. Just because we're just kind of trying to, well, obviously I picked up a little bit of debt throughout the pandemic to keep going. And so that's a new debt. And then, you know, staff, I don't want to work that much anymore. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to work the same amount of hours that I did when we first opened, and staff doesn't want to work that hard. You know, they have other things in their lives that they've cultivated throughout the last few years that are really important to them. And so, and we just don't make that much money before dinner time, you know, like we're not going to stay open through dinner time. And so we don't make that much money between school ending and people to cook. So we've kind of shortened it.
That's good. That's interesting to hear. I've been thinking about that too, because that's something we always like struggle with. Some of the stores open later, but it's really not that busy. And it's like, is it really worth those? I don't know.
Yeah.
Keeping those extra hours.
I know. It's a constant. I think we think of shops, well, we're open from 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. and that's what it is and whatever. And we kind of have to adjust our expectations of what other places are open, but also what we want to do, I think,
for
our lives.
And what's good is like being a small, still a small business, like even though we have all these stores, people think we're a big company, but we're not. Yeah. So what it's good is like you can like next week decide you're going to close early, that, you know, change the schedule. It's like you can really pivot and like make decisions and put those decisions into place like pretty quickly. So that's like, I think that's something I really appreciate too. I
mean, how have y'all kept quality as y'all grown? I know personally, I've never noticed like from 2017 to now, I've never noticed a dip in quality ever. From how often, you know, we get packages from y'all every single week, you know, and get different types of different amounts, and that has never dropped as y'all have grown or changed. So how do you figure that out?
Well, I feel like that was like one of the things we wanted to start the business, is to have like a good like quality cup of coffee, and we've always like strived to keep the quality up, and like if it, you know, even sometimes to like, you know, maybe not the making the smartest decisions if things are really expensive, but I feel like if you keep up the quality, people like keep coming back, and it sets up a good like base and people trust you. So I mean, it's just super important, and we've just been buying from the same producers, and we do QC, and we just try to train our staff. You know, there's sometimes every now and again where someone might not get a great drink, someone had a bad day, or maybe they just, someone called out and they're not trained yet to do a certain thing. So there's things that happen, but in general, like we've just been really focused since the beginning on the taste of the coffee and the presentation of the coffee. So it's just something that we've sort of really never, like, we've never taken the shortcuts in that way, so.
Yeah. How does a new employee get trained? What does that process look like?
Well, it's changed a little bit. Before the pandemic, we did have a dedicated trainer. So they would go around and like check in on the stores and like do a separate training sessions. Now we're starting to build that back, where one of our baristas, who's actually a store manager at our Manhattan West location, and he's done some of the competitions, he's really interested in QC and training. So we've started to have him do training sessions with our staff. After they're onboarding, they'll come in and do a session, and he'll kind of like see where they're at. And if they need follow-up, we'll schedule like, you know, maybe you need to work on your espresso or your latte art, or most people need to learn about more about cleaning machines, but that's kind of like a different thing. So we have one of our barista managers now do the training, whereas before we had a separate training person. But I think it's almost better because he works in the stores and he's like knows all the staff, and everyone like respects, you know, his approach, and is very, I think the most important thing is just being caring and like not making people feel awkward or embarrassed. Like if they come in and they're like ready for their training, you ask them to like show you like their drinks. So it's that. And then also with just communication about coffees and like information on coffees, we try to keep that everyone up to date on coffees that we're launching and information on the producers. So since we have quite a few locations, we'll just do that through Slack. If we launch a coffee, we'll send everyone information, and then we'll do like little like in-house coffee competitions and stuff like that, just to keep people, you know, like engaged. And also a lot of our staff like ask questions and are like love coffee and want to know more. So it's good.
Yeah. And it's a craft, so it changes, right? Like, so there's like new technology or new ideas or, you know, things that we can learn. That's been one of our biggest challenges, is that we do food as well. So everyone, you know, and we've grown more as a food business. Mm. I mean, our coffee business has stayed the same, but we've expanded with more food as well. And so we've had you know, that is a big challenge, is because we have to put out a lot of food and do a lot of prep. And then we, you know, things change on the, on how to make a great cup of coffee, or we've had to change, you know, sometimes we have to pull in a new coffee because we've just run out, you know, and we have to kind of figure it out. And that part is really challenging, to have enough space, you know, to have enough brain space to like, and curiosity, you know.
Right. So. Yeah. I feel like that is, it's so hard to keep up with the so many changes and how people are approaching how they're making espresso or how they're doing stuff. And I just, sometimes I like just leave it up to the managers or the baristas. If they have a new like tamper that they think is cool and it works better, like, and they say, oh, could we get this for the store? I'm like, sure. I feel like I've kind of let go of a lot of like, I don't want to like micromanage, and not every store is the same. I just, as long as like in the end they have the parameters and like the recipes and they're doing the best they can, is like, that's the most important. But there's so many things that can get overwhelming. Like people have different opinions on, you know, like how many grams to put in whatever X basket and how long the shot should be. And it's like a still ongoing debate. It's like, as long as, you know, I feel like you're trying your best, and you have to obviously be consistent. So we have our parameters, but if someone suggests something, or if they want a different type of scale or whatever, then I just try to be like open-minded. I used to be a little bit stubborn with stuff, but now I kind of let go of that.
I think that's one of the most interesting parts of longevity in small business is, right, obviously we, in the beginning, we're learning too. We're learning the craft. We're building a business that we're learning in, and we have so many decisions to make every day, all day. And we're wearing all hats. And then once you kind of have been in it for a year after year after year after year, you're like, oh, well, maybe that isn't that big of a deal. Or there's just so many opinions, and there's value to all of those perspectives, mm-hmm. that it's worth trying, you know?
Yeah. Sorry.
Also in a business like ours, I think small cafes would be included, small neighborhood bars would be included, is that your community, the people that come in and out all day long, are actually a huge piece of what you're doing, right? Like they do help change your business.
Yeah. I feel like for coffee especially, to keep that in mind is good, because, you know, when we were resistant to like introducing like special drinks, not specialty drinks, but like fun drinks, like whatever, like right now we have blackberry latte or something. Whereas before I'd be like, oh, no way, we're not going to have that. But the baristas are excited about it. The customers want it. And it's like, well, you just want to have a place that people are, you know, maybe it's their first coffee drink, and maybe later they can try an espresso shot or whatever, but you just want to make it more welcoming and just reach more people that way, just by being, I don't know if it's like, not, you don't want to be like pretentious about coffee. Coffee's like for everybody, and it should be a place where you take into consideration how everyone, you know, feels. So
yeah, that took me a little bit of time, I think, as well, because now we have a ton of syrups. We make our own, so that's fun, you know. And staff, we do a drink special every month, and staff comes up with it.
Yeah.
Like, we just walk around and we're like, what are you making on shift that you really love right now? Mm-hmm. And it'd be like, oh, well, it's really hot, so I've been adding Topo Chico to everything, you know, whatever.
Right.
I've been Topo Chico to everything that I'm making. Or, and it's, that part is fun, because I would never come up with a lot of the stuff that staff has come up with or think about it, you know. I'm just a different person, one.
Yeah.
So, and I'm reading cookbooks every day, you know.
Yeah, you're really doing the fun stuff, right?
Like, oh my god. And so that part is always fun to me, because when I go in, they're teaching me new things all the time.
And I think that's good, and they feel like that's more, it makes their job more interesting also. So that's like really nice to like let that part be more collaborative, I guess.
Yeah. What do you think is like one of the most important like failures that y'all have had in business, like throughout the years, something that kind of led you to maybe something better or a different perspective?
I feel like we had a couple times where we kind of knew we were going into something like, you know, on the edge of signing a lease, where we got like a kind of a gut feeling like something's not quite right. But then we sort of try to like rationalize it. Oh, maybe we're just thinking this because of this. And then we've gone ahead with it and it hasn't worked out. So I feel like the failures of every time I like haven't listened to my instinct or gut has kind of like come back to haunt me. And it's hard when you get, maybe people are giving you their opinions or you're trying to like rationalize it in a different way or make a decision where you think like you should make it in a certain way because you're a business owner and you got to like put all the stuff on paper in a certain sense. But I feel like the failure that has taught me like really, you need to really trust yourself and trust that all the experiences that you've had over the years with this business and just day to day, like they're guiding you almost like you talked about earlier with like feeling the vibes of the stores. Yeah. I mean, it sounds silly, but you really have to trust that you have intuition and you have knowledge that's inside and you need to just kind of tap into that. If something's not quite right, like really maybe step back and like, maybe don't do it or so.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I definitely have had that as well. One sign, we were trying to open a second location and I'd worked on it for, you know, probably 2 years looking for spaces and something came up and I ended up just not signing right, like at the very last minute. And I was just like, I don't know. And talking to my realtor, I was like, what do you think? Am I making a terrible decision? Like, this makes so much sense. And that was a couple months before the pandemic hit. And I just was like, I have no reason to say no, but I'm going to say no.
That's good. That's good that you did that. Yeah. You just followed your, spidey senses.
Yeah. And that building still isn't built. It was a new construction and they still haven't built it. And they've done nothing with it. I was like, oh my God, that worked out. But I think another thing is like times where I haven't, where I challenged my communication skills, where I was like, I need to have this conversation and I put it off and put it off and put it off because of whatever reasons I was coming up with. And it was disastrous. Like it caught, you know, those when you know, I was like, well, it's fine. It's fine. It doesn't matter. And then it was just a complete disaster. And when I needed to, things are really scary, but they are always scary. And you just kind of have to keep, you have to do it anyway.
That's a really good example. I feel like it's sometimes so awkward, the things that you have to address, and the faster you can do it and like make certain decisions, especially when it comes to like staffing, hiring, firing, or just any staff communication or something you might have to tell. So I feel like, you know, you just got to just do it. Like when you think about it, cause you can get so, that's really a hurdle. I don't know if you're a shy person, but like for me, I'm very shy. So it's like, that's like really a challenge.
Yeah. I definitely have like my conversations will be very awkward. I was like, what I'm trying to say is like, what is happening now? And yeah. And like with staff, like we're communicating all the time. And so everyone kind of with different shifts, I mean, that's kind of what happens. People get a piece of the story or a piece of information. Yeah. You don't always know if everyone, who knows the whole, the whole conversation or not. And I think that's a lot of people, why people hate working in hospitality too, right? Like you don't always know what's going on. You're just kind of doing this work, during your shift. And
yeah, I've been trying to like ask more questions lately. Like if someone tells me something, instead of like just writing the response, I'll like ask a few more questions to get a little bit more information. So that's like how I feel like that's helping as well with that.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Do y'all do any like with so many stores? Do y'all ever have like a staff day, or does all the staff get together at any time during the year?
I mean, we did do a holiday movie where we went to see. Oh my gosh, what is it called? The one where they like go to that restaurant in the islands. I forget what it's called right now. It's like kind of a horror movie, sort of. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
I'll try to remember the name. But we all went to, we rented like a movie theater and we had a showing of a movie and we had food at the movie theater. So we did that in the holidays. It's hard to get everyone together. We'll have manager meetings and we have like manager lunches at the roastery. So a few managers will come and we'll chat about what's going on at their stores. And also it's nice because I feel like managers are almost like on a little island by themselves sometimes. And it's awkward for people sometimes when they're co-worker, they're, you know, it's their friend, but they're their manager and it's a coffee shop. So they're working so closely. So we try to have manager lunches and chat and just have an outlet where they can speak with each other. But mostly, and we've had some throwdowns, but kind of building back up since after the pandemic, I still feel like it's not as much as we used to do. And also, I feel like people have their own stuff going on more now and they have their own little groups. So I don't want to have to, I never make anyone like come to an all staff meeting. Like each manager has store meetings and then we'll check in, but we really haven't had a like all staff thing.
So. Yeah. Ours have gotten, I usually do a day where we do whatever, something everyone decides. We've gone like water tubing, you know.
That's nice.
Yeah, that's awesome. It was really fun. But the weather is so odd. So sometimes the river has been too low. So we'll like take off and then the river, we can't get on the river because it's like dangerous. So we've like sat in the park and, you know, we have City Park here and Cafe Du Monde, which is the beignets and cafe.
Oh yes. I know that place.
And it's like so cheesy, but it's really fun. And you're just surrounded by tourists, but also like we're never in that situation.
Yeah.
So it's been really fun. And there's a kid's playground, like old school fairy tale stories. And so the playground like Cinderella and the moon, the whatever, like all these things.
I think it's good to like get out of the workspace and like, you know, with their team. That's nice to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Be real people.
Yeah.
I know we're still catching up on from COVID and the pandemic, but what do you think the next few years looks like? Or what do you have any like bigger vision or longer term vision of what Cafe Grumpy look like?
Well, for Cafe Grumpy, I mean, my vision, I would really love it to be like nationwide. I feel like the coffee and then also just like the logo and the brand, I feel like can resonate with people. And it's, I'd love to see someone take that across the country, you know, if it's not me, that's fine. I'll just go and get coffee. So yeah. I would like to see, you know, I'd like to just reach more people and kind of keep up. Like it's supposed to be a fun,
yeah, you
know, fun coffee experience, but it's also good coffee. So as far as like actual plans, we just launched our instant coffee, which I thought we'd never do, but since the pandemic, people are like, do you have anything that, like, I'm too lazy to make coffee. Do you have anything to make my smoothie? So we just did that. We're still trying to, we sold out of our Tetra Pak run. So we're trying to plan our next run. That's a kind of a big project because there's such a high minimum and we brew all the coffee in our roastery. So that's an ongoing project. And then we're redoing our order ahead app. So hopefully we'll have that for the fall so that like, if people come back into the office, that'll be something we can like use to promote different drinks. And then just trying to keep, you know, keep going, keep the coffee coming.
Yeah.
The day to day stuff, which I try not to get overwhelmed with.
Totally.
But yeah, so I have my dogs, which is good. You know, someone who's happy to see me.
Yeah.
We're just trying to move along and just keep everyone, like, just keep the staff, like, engaged and happy and the customers happy and keep the coffee good quality and keep the stores open. We had to close a couple locations during the pandemic. So that was, you know, a little bit stressful, but we just keep going. As long as I have coffee in the morning, I'm good.
Yeah. So. Well, you have a good location, a good office. Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, I think that Well, we're adding nutrition services. We've definitely have had to like switch what we're doing. You know, we started as just a coffee shop and added cafe and been so entrenched in like community issues. And now we're adding these nutrition services. And so it's just interesting. I never would have ever thought when I was opening the shop that we would look so different, you know?
Yeah.
And through the pandemic, we bulked everything up. So now you can buy all of our cookie dough and like our black bean, our hummuses that we use on meals.
Oh, that's cool. I'm sure people love that. It's like, yeah, that's really great.
Yeah, salad. Yeah. So it looks very different.
And uh-huh.
Not at all what I would think. I recently heard someone say, you can write a 5-year plan, but it's absolutely meaningless. It doesn't mean anything. Who knows what's going to happen?
Yeah, you have to like just read the room or whatever. I think that's so important, especially like, did you add those things during the pandemic just because people were coming in to get like they wanted some more food and like prepared stuff? Is that how that happened?
Our shop is so small and it has really low ceilings and we don't have a back entrance. All of our windows are kind of concentrated in one area. And so we were just delayed in reopening the dining space longer than other people were. And then we did deliveries. I did deliveries. And so I was like, well, I can't sell a sandwich. I can't, you know what I mean? Like, and it doesn't make any sense for me for the delivery and the way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I asked customers like, what if we just bulk everything up? So you made the sandwiches that you love in your
house,
but we give you everything.
That's cool. That's smart.
Yeah. And it stuck. And we just kept, we don't do deliver anymore, but we do all of the same thing. Mm-hmm. So we still have it.
And the nutrition, is that like meal prep? Like people can like just...
It will be meal prepped, but I'm becoming a dietitian. So I went back to school during the pandemic in 2020. So I do one-on-one counseling. So I just actually last month launched those nutrition services. So my customers can come in, and that just came from sitting at the counter and talking to people.
Yeah.
Long, because they're like, I don't feel good today. What do you have? You know, what kind of drink do you have? Or what food I'm not eating dairy anymore. Or I'm not eating gluten anymore. And so our menu evolved like that. But then it's also like, well, I don't know. Let me learn. So then I would like research and try to learn. And then I was like, wait, we can just do it like that. That can be a service. Like,
that's awesome. That's like a great resource. Cause you're right. People do come in and be like, do you recommend this for this? And that's really cool.
Yeah. So we're on a new journey here as well.
That will like change maybe your special drinks too, like come up with certain things for different complaints.
For like the Mardi Gras flu, like when everyone gets sick.
That's so really sad. Funny.
Yeah. So we have all those. But I thank you so much for talking to me. I really appreciate it. I know we email, you know, I'd always try to like reach out to you and questions, but it's nice to just sit.
Oh, yeah. It's nice to talk to some, you know, someone in coffee and business owner too. It's like, you know, because otherwise you just kind of go about your business and don't kind of take that time to like think about
what other people are doing.
Yeah.
Think about it. Yeah. Well, thank you.
Well, yeah, it was nice chatting. Talk to you soon. Okay. Okay, bye, Renee.
Well, that's all for today. Thanks so much for listening to Making Good. You can find our podcast on all the platforms you find your favorite podcasts. You can also find a transcript of this episode and all of our episodes on our website, churchalley.store. If you loved this episode, please share it and let others know about the good work of Church Alley Cafe and Grocery. Thanks again for listening to Making Good. I hope you have a really good day. We'll see you next time.